Surviving a life-threatening illness often leaves a person changed. This hour, cancer survivors share their experiences through art. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new Living Proof exhibit, opening soon at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport, showcases the work of cancer survivors. Pamela Crouch is co-founder of the exhibit. She's also an artist and a cancer survivor. I'll talk with her about her experience and the work featured in the exhibit. Then later in the hour, we'll talk about the long-term challenges that many cancer survivors face. We also want to hear your story. Join our conversation after the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. It's quieter in Ferguson, Missouri, after some protests turned violent last night. Officials say 31 people were arrested and 2 people were shot by other demonstrators. Missouri Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson, who is in command, says a tiny group of instigators are hiding in crowds of lawful protesters and inciting violence. Police responded last night with tear gas. Nancy Fowler of St. Louis Public Radio says she visited a restaurant in Fowler this morning where some people had broken in.
When I was at this Red's Barbecue on the corner that was the scene of the conflict last night, police were telling the employee there that was cleaning up that the people that broke in last night did not break in to do damage, but instead to seek shelter from the chaos that was outside. And nothing was stolen or seemed to be tampered with except the one broken window where people, entered and exited later.
Reporter Nancy Fowler. Captain Johnson has now asked Ferguson protesters to demonstrate during the day and not at night when criminals have attacked police. Israel says it has responded with airstrikes in Gaza after a round of rockets was fired from there into Israel. The rockets and airstrikes apparently end a temporary ceasefire that was supposed to last for the rest of the day. The BBC's Kevin Connolly has more from Jerusalem.
We are now a little bit more than halfway through the third in a chain of ceasefires. The first was 3 days, the second 5 days. We're now in a 24-hour ceasefire. And, of course, this is a clear breach of that ceasefire, those 3 rockets fired from Gaza that landed near the city of Beersheba in open ground. Israel is now responding. I suppose the question is, what happens next? Is this an end of the ceasefire or something that will come to be seen as an isolated breach of it?
The BBC's Kevin Connolly reporting from Jerusalem. New reports from eastern Ukraine indicate that Ukrainian government troops have been advancing on pro-Russian rebels in the eastern city of Luhansk. NPR's Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson is about 60 miles away from the previously rebel-held city.
According to the reports that are coming out, there is fighting in the center. This is the first time that Ukrainian military is deep inside the city. And, of course, this does not bode well for the pro-Russian separatists who are holding the city. But they're not giving up. They're not running away as they have done in some other towns.
NPR's Soraya Sarhadi-Nelson near Luhansk, Ukraine. People are fleeing the eastern Ukrainian region. The United Nations estimates that nearly 350,000 people have tried to escape the fighting. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrials are up 68 points at 16,907. The Nasdaq is up 12 points. It's at 4,520. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
It's 10:04. I'm Dennis Reese, Iowa Public Radio News. The commission that oversees water quality regulations in Iowa is considering adopting rules that align state regulations with those imposed by the Federal Clean Water Act. The Environmental Protection Commission's proposed rules primarily give the Iowa Department of Natural Resources authority to issue permits that regulate manure handling for livestock farms to discharge manure into waterways. A vote on the rules is set for today. Bail has been set at $6,000 for a former Forest City police officer who is awaiting his second trial on burglary and arson charges. A judge set the amount yesterday for 37-year-old Thaddeus Ellenbecker. In May, the Iowa Court of Appeals ordered a new trial for Ellenbecker, saying officers failed to read him his Miranda rights. A 33-year-old Fort Dodge woman has been sentenced to an Iowa prison for defrauding the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Online court records say Lynette Ladd was sentenced yesterday in Webster County District Court. The Fort Dodge Messenger says she was given 5 years. Ladd had pleaded guilty to fraudulent practices. Well, three siblings from Johnston are sharing a $1 million lottery prize. 61-year-old Stephen Bevis, his 59-year-old brother Craig, and their 55-year-old sister Marcia claimed their prize yesterday at Iowa Lottery headquarters in Des Moines. Stephen Bevis bought the winning ticket at a grocery store in Des Moines. Rain now has moved out of extreme southeast Iowa. Mostly sunny to partly sunny today. The highs 78 to 88.
Support for NPR comes from Regis, providing office solutions for startups to Fortune 500s, with 700 U.S. locations. More at 1-800-OFFICES.
Support comes from Forever Green Landscaping, with over 2 acres of nursery, greenhouses, and display gardens at 125 Forever Green Road in Coralville, or online at forevergreengrows.com. Forever Green Landscaping, Nursery, Garden Center, and Greenhouses.
I'm Peter Sagal. Studies show that the secret to human happiness is a spiffy new car. No, really, it's science. So when it's time to trade up for bliss, donate your used car to us, and we'll turn it into the programs you love.
Learn how you can donate your car, too, at iowapublicradio.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Cancer diagnosis and treatment is an incredible ordeal. Those who survive often find that they're changed in meaningful ways. This hour, we'll talk about that experience and how some cancer survivors are expressing themselves through art. The new Living Proof exhibit opens soon at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport, and it showcases the work of cancer survivors. Pamela Crouch is here with me. She is co-founder of the exhibit. She is also an artist and a cancer survivor. Hello, Pamela.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
And I want to start with your experience. I know that before you were diagnosed with cancer, you were a writer.
Yes, I was. And I was diagnosed in 2008, actually. And prior to that, I had been a writer writing commercials and videos and various things. But during chemotherapy, I had a strange little side effect. I had aphasia. I lost my ability to remember nouns. So my clients weren't fond of when I kept referring to their projects as things and stuff. So I had to find a different way to express myself, and it came out in art.
Now, I'm sure that that was a very surprising thing to happen to you. When did you realize that it was a problem that didn't seem to be clearing up right away?
Almost instantly. You go through the surgeries and your brain, you're a bit in shock. And then when I started my chemotherapy, I really was unable to remember anything. I became very good at pantomime, and my husband became very good at filling in the blanks. And after a while, he just told me what I wanted. I couldn't remember anyway, so it was fine. But I started to feel sorry for myself because I loved the written word, and I couldn't read. I couldn't write. I couldn't do anything.
You couldn't read.
I couldn't remember. I would read a sentence over and over and over again, and it would not take. So I would just stare at that blank page. So I really did feel sorry for myself. And then it occurred to me that I can still see, I can still use my hands. So I'm supposed to be creative. I went out to an art supply store and bought little birdhouses. And I started painting those, and I painted them with pink roofs. The idea was to give them to other newly diagnosed cancer patients. I was always taught that if you do something for someone else, you can't really feel sorry for yourself. It takes that pain away, and you think outward. So it really made a huge difference. I became very happy. Little birdhouses are adorable anyway. And I found another way to use my creativity. And so that became my own personal art therapy.
What kind of cancer were you?
I had breast cancer, and my lymph nodes were affected.
Having already gotten that diagnosis and going through the treatment and then experiencing this side effect, this aphasia, I mean, that also robbed you of your livelihood. Did you have to quit working?
I did. And I'm also an actress, and I was diagnosed while I was in a show. So it also, my hobby. So I couldn't do my livelihood. I couldn't do my hobby. And I'm always able to think of new ways to to reinvent myself, and it ended up that art therapy took me in a completely different direction, and now I work with Living Proof.
So you went to the store and you bought these little birdhouses. I mean, what was going through your mind? I mean, what an unusual outlet.
It was indeed. I was going up and down the aisles. I was like, I'm in a craft store. I'm going to find something to do. And I found the birdhouses. They were really inexpensive. That might have had something to do with it. And I'm really not a painter. But I thought, you know, I can do this. And I painted the roofs pink. I put little hearts on them and little flowers. They're not going to win any awards, but it didn't matter. And I've had other survivors paint them. We would get together and we would just be in a group and we'd chit-chat and laugh and paint these, and then we would donate them.
How did you take that step from painting some birdhouses to moving into this phase of your life where, I mean, you're expressing yourself through art, you're also helping other people do the same thing? How did that transformation occur?
Well, I met locally, there's a breast cancer support group, and I met Mary Ellen Cunningham, who's also a survivor, who also used her art. Her work was actually in a local exhibit. So I bounced up to her at one of our meetings, and I mean that literally. I bounced up to her, and I said, "You're an artist? I'm an artist. Let's put on a show." She, to her credit, she did not run away from me. She actually said, "Okay." And she had some friends who are professional artists. One of them, Jackie Olson, is actually now our art therapist. She has her degree from DePaul. And we got together, and at Bucktown Center for the Arts in the Quad Cities, we put on our first exhibit. Mary Ellen and I met in March. Our exhibit was up in October very fast. We had artists from quite a long ways away. We had, you know, within 60, 70 miles of the Quad Cities. And it was all breast cancer survivors. And that's how we celebrated. Because Mary Ellen used art during her work, also during her treatments, and I used it, we decided that art therapy was going to be a long-term goal for us. We researched it. Indeed, there's significant evidence that art is therapeutic and does help survivors and patients deal with the emotions and also a lot of times the physical issues that occur and follow the diagnosis, the treatment, and also helps their families. So we researched it and we said, this is what we want to do. We expected in 5 years we'd be doing art therapy. We started doing art therapy right away, right at Gilda's Club in Davenport, the very same year we started the whole organization.
Wow.
And we've grown leaps and bounds since then.
Tell me about your art. I mean, you've evolved beyond painting birdhouses, although I'm sure you still paint the occasional birdhouse.
Occasionally I paint the birdhouse, yes. I do photography and mixed media, and I've started working on abstracts also. Everything is nature-based for me. I'm happiest when I'm outside. I'm happiest when I'm observing nature. And I like looking at nature in an abstract way rather than realistic, you know. So I always, my photography, everything is very, very specific, one item. Sometimes I like it the best when you don't know what it is until you have to really search to figure out, oh, that's a flower.
And you have had a health setback since your original cancer treatment.
A few times. There have been some issues. One of the things is that when I was bald, they discovered I had skin cancer on the top of my head. Would have never known that. I have a lot of hair. They would have never known that if I hadn't lost it. So technically, I've had two kinds of cancer in just a very short amount of time.
Wow.
But happy to say that that was several years ago, and so far, still cancer-free.
And you also went through a period where you were restricted for what you could lift.
Yes, lymphedema. Because my lymph nodes were involved, I had just recently, I had a pretty bad episode of lymphedema and my arms swelled up. I couldn't do anything. I was restricted to 2 pounds. So again, I turned to art. And one of the pieces I have in the Figge Art Museum, I can't believe it's there, but I created it one-handed, and it's a collage, mixed media, and it's all sorts of things. But I needed to make something bigger than the bandage that was encasing my arm.
So think back. I mean, you've gone through a lot of changes career-wise since you were diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the person that you were prior to that diagnosis and the person that you are today. How did this experience change you?
Well, a cancer diagnosis changes everyone. You start looking at life. You start whittling it down to what is the most important thing, what are the most important things in your life. And for me, it was always people. I had to look at a reason. I had to find a reason. I'm very faith-based. And for me, I looked at a reason. I'm a talker. I am willing to get out there and share my story. I am willing to reach out to other people. And so it just became sort of a mission for me to help other people find a creative outlet that would help them with their emotions and help them find new ways to deal with the problems that they have during chemotherapy. One of our hopes is that we get to be in infusion centers. You're sitting there for 3 hours with, you know, toxic chemicals pouring into your veins, and a lot of times you don't have anything to do. We would love to bring in clay. We'd love to bring in things that people can do with their hands.
So this experience for you has really altered your purpose.
It has. It has. I started off as an educator, so I was always working with people, just a little bit smaller than I am now. And so I think always, there's always been a service orientation to my life. And now everything is coming together. All of my art, all of my background, my writing, I use that a lot too. Now that I remember my nouns, it's very helpful. And being able to work with people, it's all just come together.
It also sounds like in many ways, having had cancer, surviving cancer, defines a lot of who you are now.
It does. And it does it for everyone. Many of our artists who are in this exhibit say, cancer does not affect my artistry. I was an artist beforehand. I happen to have cancer, and now I'm an artist after. And absolutely. But we also have some people in the exhibit, they couldn't work. One woman, she literally could not do her job anymore. Her kids gave her paints. And she paints now, and her work is beautiful and very, very emotionally based, you can tell. And it's the same thing for me. I decided to take my cancer diagnosis and live my life with that as part of my purpose and be able to work with other organizations.
All right. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk more about this exhibit, and we're going to bring Melissa Moore into the conversation in a moment. But where did the idea come from for you to have an exhibit of art created by cancer survivors at the Figge Art Museum?
Well, that would just literally be the way I think. I spent 14 years working in an improv troupe in the Quad Cities, and my brain bounces that way. I said, if Mary Ellen and I both do it, other people must too. And indeed they did.
The solution of let's put on a show.
Pretty much.
The end point of many projects in your life. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. The opening reception for the Living Proof exhibit at the Figge Art Museum is on Thursday evening at 5:30. We'll also talk more about the Full Circle Project, which is this art therapy project that we've touched on a little bit. I'm talking with Pamela Crouch. She is co-founder of the Living Proof exhibit. She's also an artist and a cancer survivor. In a moment, I'll talk with Melissa Moore, Director of Education at the Figge Art Museum. And we also want to hear from you. Are you a cancer survivor? How has this experience changed you? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour we're talking about the artwork created by cancer survivors. We'll also focus more on that experience, how surviving cancer changes people, a little bit later in the hour. We do want to hear your stories, too. If you're a cancer survivor or if somebody close to you is, tell us how that experience has changed you or your loved one. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can post on our Facebook page. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And the inspiration for this conversation is the new Living Proof exhibit that opens this week at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport. It showcases the work of cancer survivors. Pamela Crouch is co-founder of the exhibit. She's also an artist artist and a cancer survivor, and her work will be featured at the exhibit. And also joining us now is Melissa Moore, Director of Education at the Figge Art Museum. Hello, Melissa.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And how did this show come about? I just asked Pamela for her inspiration, and her solution to many problems is put on a show. But when you were approached about the idea of putting on an exhibit featuring the work of cancer survivors, what was your response?
You know, Pamela and I met about 4 years ago. We were both on the same nonprofit board for a theater in Davenport, Iowa. And at that point, I was doing outreach in the schools for the Figge Art Museum. I wasn't in charge of our community gallery, which is the one hosting Living Proof exhibit, Cancer Survivor Art, which had its opening, just a soft opening on August 16th.
Okay. Sorry.
No, that's okay. We're ready to celebrate it on Thursday, and we hope many who are listening now will be able to join us. But when Pamela and I met on that board, there was an instant attraction in terms of energy. We got along. I knew nothing about theater. She knew a great deal about it, and so she was able to help familiarize me with that. And through those conversations, she started talking about Living Proof Exhibit, this nonprofit that she'd been working toward with Mary Ellen Cunningham, the other co-founder of Living Proof Exhibit. And she said, you know, we're going to do this exhibition. We're so excited about it. Well, given the outreach I was doing in the schools, I was especially interested in what she was doing with that exhibition because I have a dear friend who's an art therapist, and she had been working with me to do the outreach in the schools in a way that was very thoughtful of the power of art and creating art, not only just learning about it through the curriculum in terms of art history, which is where my background is, but also about how it can help you express yourself regardless of who you are, what skills you have. So I think that Pamela and I started talking about possibly partnering with Living Proof Exhibit in the Figge back then. It wasn't, though, until maybe a year and a half ago, when Pamela came back and said, hey, we're still doing this, and it's a great opportunity. By that point, I was running, or I am now running, one of the galleries in the Figge, the community gallery, which features all of the great things happening in our community. And I thought, you know what, we need to think about this as a potential partnership because it just makes sense.
Now, both of you can chime in on this, but when you decided, yes, we're going to do this, we're going to do this at the Figge, how did you go about finding all of these cancer survivors who are also doing art?
Well, we have an outreach, and we went on locally. We went to the newspapers and the television. We reached out to Gilda's Club members, to the hospitals, to our support groups, the cancer support groups in the area. We reach artists 150 miles from the Quad Cities, so we're into Chicago. We have someone from Fairfield, Comanche, several places, and we just inundated everybody with press releases. Come join us. Come join us.
And were you surprised by the response?
Yes and no. I know, just knowing Pamela, I know how persuasive she can be and also how comforting she can be. I mean, this is an opportunity for people, and the way that she and Mary Ellen framed it was just that, you know, many people think of the museum as somewhere where you only hang the Picassos or the Matisses, but it really is a community organization that is for our community, and Pamela and Mary Ellen made sure people knew that. What I think is really cool about it is that this exhibition has been growing over the years, although it's the first time at the Figge Art Museum. Just on Saturday, I was in the gallery, and one of our security guards was walking through on their normal rounds and paused and said, you know, I should have done something for this. I'm a cancer survivor. So now, from this point forward, we will also continue to reach people and hopefully continue to grow the program.
Absolutely.
And how many artists are featured?
We have about 50 pieces of art, and we have 40 artists.
And can you give me an idea of kind of the diversity of the artists in the program?
As far as their art? We have a variety of works. We have some of our artists are professionals, but many of them, we have one woman who created a prayer shawl. We have quilts. We have acrylics, photography, mixed media, ceramics, jewelry.
A lot of textile art, too, fiber arts.
Yes, lots of fiber arts. And all kinds. It started off with just because Mary Ellen and I are both breast cancer survivors. It started off that way, and now we've grown. We have all kinds of cancer represented, you know, survivors represented. And one of the wonderful purposes is that we are celebrating the survivorship. We're not curing cancer, but we want other people who've been diagnosed to look back and say, wow, this person is not only surviving, but they're thriving, and look what they're creating.
Did you have to convince anybody that they were an artist to be part of this exhibit?
I didn't have to convince anyone that they were an artist, but as Melissa said, that some people were a little bit hesitant about showing at the Figge, because to them, perhaps their quilting wasn't Figge quality to them. And it's perfect. It looks so gorgeous in that.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is. It's lovely.
So we had an idea of what was coming in. It was a show that Pamela and Mary Ellen had people jury. So it wasn't the Figge jurying it, but it was the actual team from Living Proof Exhibit. And we knew what was coming in, but when you see it there in the gallery and you start laying it out, you know, first it's about the visuals. But what we found as we were laying it out was that it's also about the stories and how we can connect the stories behind each of the artworks from one to the other to really communicate to our audiences, even those who happen to walk in and don't even know the exhibition is there, really communicate how powerful this is and how everybody can take part of that and find meaning in their own lives.
And I have a collection of stories, and some of them are very short, some of them are a little bit longer. Was inviting people to write their stories an important part of this?
It was, because everybody's journey is different. And as I said earlier, some of our artists said, you know, my cancer didn't have anything to do with what I created. I said, that's fine. Tell us about yourself. As you've been asking people, mm-hmm. how did cancer change you? Your outlook on life does change. And imagine that you're speaking to somebody who's just beginning their journey. So many of our artists have wonderful stories, and they're stories of strength and energy and creativity. And it's exciting to read them.
Can you give me an example of a person who's featured in the exhibit whose story has really connected with you?
I believe I talked briefly about one of our artists, and she's new this year to us. She reached out. She's thrilled to be involved. But her – and I sort of – because of my lymphedema issue, I can understand this. But she could not – she had to quit her job. Her cancer – and it wasn't breast cancer. Her cancer became so invasive. She could no longer do her job. So she quit a job she loved. And her kids literally bought her paints, gave her canvases, said, Mom, you've always wanted to paint. Now's your opportunity. And that was the key word. It's an opportunity. We're all given challenges in life. What do you do with it? And she just created some of the most beautiful pieces of work.
Can you describe one of her paintings for me?
They're abstracts. And they're vivid, vivid colors. When you see them, it's they pop off the walls, and there's just so much energy coming out of them and so much life.
Melissa, is there an artist that you'd like to talk about a little bit?
It's actually a connection I'd like to make, if you don't mind. When Pamela was talking earlier in the show about making the birdhouses and how there's something in service to others that takes you out of yourself and gets you past any sort of depressing feelings you have or thoughts, I think that some of the spirit of that and helping move past this, move through it, is in the show too. There are a few artists, one who actually makes hats and then donates them to children who don't have these sorts of things in the Ukraine that I think is so powerful. So you see all of it coming together in this exhibition and giving people that confidence, highlighting the wonderful things that they're doing, but also helping them with a passion of theirs in art, but also something that is vital to their very existence.
Now, when people come to you and get involved in your art therapy classes, your art therapy program, and the Full Circle Project is also something that it's available to people if they want to get involved, right?
It is. Yeah. You need to register. The Full Circle Project, it came from a conversation with Don Wilfred Metello, works at Quad City Arts, and there was a program where soldiers would take their uniforms after they had left the service and turn those uniforms into paper. So Don and I took it one step further and said, cancer survivors, how can we work this out? So cancer survivors can register, and everything that we do is grant funded. This particular program is funded with Iowa Arts Council and the Figge. We're partnered, and it's going to be Don and Mary Patton and Amy Richards from the University of Iowa going to be teaching our survivors how to take articles of clothing that they wore, or we will provide them with hospital gowns. I'm really excited to rip up a hospital gown and make it into paper And then Kat Anderson from St. Ambrose University is going to teach us how to make that into books. And Ryan Collins from Midwest Writing Center is going to teach us about journaling. Complete transformation of an item that reminds you of a terrible dark time in your life when you were newly diagnosed to creating something that is going to help you move forward. Again, it's free thanks to funding that we have, and people can register. Livingproofexhibit.org is our website, livingproofexhibit@gmail.com. They can email us, and we would love to have a lot more people involved.
You know, you talk about ripping up a hospital gown. We got an email from Bob, who is a 2.5-year cancer survivor. He sent us a picture of a tattoo that he has that disparages cancer. His caption was just body art, but it's a picture of Calvin peeing on the word cancer. But that made me laugh, but it also makes me think about there's a little anger. There's some frustration. There's a sense of unfairness that a lot of cancer survivors have to deal with. Do you see that expressed in some of the art in the exhibit? Is there a little bit of an in-your-face cancer kind of feeling?
Over the years, there has been a little bit. What's interesting is that this year we have survivors who've been several years out. But when you're in the moment, your work is a little darker. I have a piece that it's tucked away, but it turned out, at first it was like, oh, lovely colors. And then in the middle of it is a big black splotch that looks like a bird. I'm not sure what I was channeling, but it was something.
When you start working with people and, you know, they come to you, they want to be a part of making art, but a lot of them probably aren't artists to begin with. I mean, you brought a lovely little birdhouse, and we talked about how you started with birdhouses, and that is darling. But how do you get people started in finding their talents? Because a lot of us haven't made art since high school art class or junior high art class.
Oh, one thing to make clear, we are not junior high art class because I would flunk perspective all over again. Our art therapist, Jackie, is phenomenal. What she does is one of the first things she does with a new group is she has them do a monoprint and you paint on glass. Then you turn the glass over and put it on onto the paper. You lose control. Think about that. The fact that you're painting on glass, you press it onto the paper, you don't really know. It's like, oh, it doesn't have to look like a flower. That's okay. One of our artists, there's a great quote from her. She said, if you think it's a flower, and that's all good. We're not teaching you. We're teaching you various ways of expressing yourself, but there are no grades. And Jackie's wonderful about getting non-artists to create and express themselves.
And tell me a little bit about some of the other things that you brought. You did bring some visuals. Other than your birdhouse, you also have a picture that looks like a Burmese mountain dog to me, a very beautiful picture, a dog portrait here. Where does that come from?
Well, that actually is one of our artists, Judith. And one of the realities of working with cancer survivors is we don't always have them for any length of time. And Judith has passed away, but she came to every single art therapy class that we had. And so I take her portrait, her paintings with me when I go. We have some people who attend our art therapy classes who are creating legacies for their families because, unfortunately, there is that side of the cancer. Our show celebrates the survivorship. And so we also, you know, but during the therapy sessions, we have people of all kinds of cancer and all degrees of cancer. We also work with teens, and we work with the Gildas teens, and they're in bereavement classes. Some of the kids, their parents are undergoing therapy right now, chemotherapy or treatments of some kind. So it's a fact of life, and we don't shy away from it. We can't. We celebrate that life and that joy, and Judith's piece speaks to it. As you can see, it's just such a beautiful, expressive piece. But she attended every class, and unfortunately, the cancer did win. But her art is still here, and her light is still here because of it.
What do you feel the art therapy does for people? You've talked about what it did for you, but why is this such a powerful experience for people?
Well, a lot of times it's hard to talk about what's going on in your life, but your hands are busy, your mind opens up, and you can just quietly talk about it. It's the same thing as if you have kids and you need to talk about it, about something important, you go on a walk and the kids will suddenly open up. It's that therapeutic idea. It's the same thing with art therapy. You're creating something, you're taking your mind off of it, and then you say, last night I couldn't sleep because I had worries. Somebody else will say, oh, that happened to me. And so it's a natural conversation that arises. And it doesn't feel like you're sitting in a therapy class talking. There's nothing wrong with that kind of a therapy at all. It's wonderful. But sometimes when you need to get down to someone and your hands are busy, your mind is able to open up, you're able to express some of the concerns, the fears that you have. But then at the end of it, you've created something that reminds you yourself, I'm still here. It's tangible. It's right there. You can take it home, put it on your refrigerator, frame it, whatever you want to do with it, or never show it. Just keep it in your drawer.
What do you hope the public will get out of this show? I mean, people have been visiting the Figge since Saturday and seeing these pieces of art. What do you want them to take away from the experience?
Well, cancer is a nasty disease. It's just there's nothing nice about it. But we want people to look at this work and see strength, see joy, see hope, see celebration, and to also realize how beautiful art is, no matter what's going on in your life, and how beneficial it can be.
Also, from the Figge's perspective, you know, our mission is to bring people and art together at that basic level. And then when we look at how we're doing that, a large chunk of that is through collecting and conserving, but also exhibiting and educating. When we talk about educating, it's also about giving confidence. So you're learning about something. Perhaps it's how to make it yourself or how to communicate. It's the confidence that we hope people get through the inspiration of these artworks
Melissa,
they take into their own life.
And Pamela, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Pamela Crouch, co-founder of the Living Proof exhibit, and Melissa Moore, director of education at the Figge Art Museum. Living Proof exhibit is on display right now at the Figge. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we've been talking about cancer survivors expressing themselves through art. Now, of course, not all cancer survivors express themselves through art, but all cancer survivors have been through a major life-changing experience, and many of them need support. My next guests work with cancer survivors. Jen Adams is a social worker at Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Iowa. Hello, Jen.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And Liz Cullen is a nurse practitioner in radiation oncology at the University of Iowa. Hello, Liz.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for being here today. And of course, we want you to join the conversation as well. Are you a cancer survivor? How did the experience change you? Have you been surprised by some of the differences in the person you are now and the person you were before? What kind of support do you still need? Share your story. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jen, I know that when a person is diagnosed with cancer, obviously that's a very frightening time. The treatments, many different treatments for cancer, are also often extremely difficult. I mean, this treatment that people go through can be quite traumatic, can't it?
Yes, it can, certainly. The chemotherapy or radiation or surgery that people do have for all different various types of cancers can certainly play a role in how they feel throughout the treatment, as well as for long-term and late side effects of cancer.
When people go through this process of treating cancer, I mean, we talked earlier in the program about how sometimes that can really rob them of who they are for a while. And some people have to quit their jobs. Some people go through really dramatic life changes. How do you support them as they're going through that?
Right. Well, a lot of times the social and emotional aspects of a cancer diagnosis and treatment are just as impacting and as dramatic as the physical changes and things that happen during cancer. And one of the things that I try and do with as many patients as I can see as possible is really assess their current functioning, how they are feeling, what their support is. You know, this is not something that most people can do alone, and certainly determining how they are feeling emotionally as well as physically is just as important. And certainly with the social aspects, many, many people go through cancer treatment as they are raising children or taking care of elderly patients, or parents. Trying to work, keeping their job, or returning to the workforce after treatment. Those are many, many things that patients tell me that they are concerned about and experience as they go along through their cancer treatment.
Well, and Liz, of course, when people go through cancer treatment and after they get through their cancer treatments, we would like for them to be able to focus on their health and the people that they love. But for a lot of cancer survivors, there are a lot of other issues as well. What are some of the issues that you find people deal with?
Right. There's numerous challenges that can really place significant impact on the overall health and well-being for a cancer survivor. There's the physical effects. I think Pamela earlier touched on, you know, the cognitive impairment or what we often call chemo brain that can come along. There's also lymphedema, peripheral neuropathy, you know, long-term pain and fatigue that can all, you know, impact the patient. Their psychosocial well-being can also be affected. You know, survivors often report feelings of depression or anxiety related to fear of recurrence. And then some also experience, you know, an altered body image, which can affect, you know, their relationships and their self-esteem and their overall mood. You know, and I think, you know, both Jen and Pamela earlier also touched on the economic challenges that can happen. And, you know, the physical alterations of your cancer treatment might impact whether or not you can return to your job or, you know, your health insurance for future.
Right. Well, and a lot of people, of course, also accumulate a lot of medical bills.
Right.
While
right.
they're undergoing cancer treatment. So the financial concerns can be a very challenging factor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, even, you know, Jen helps a lot with, you know, transportation. You know, people come from all across the state to come to the University of Iowa for their treatment. Even getting to and from here and lodging once you get here, you know, can all be, you know, an economic impact.
So as you're working with cancer survivors, Jen, of course, there's this focus of getting through the treatment, getting through the chemo, getting through the radiation or whatever kinds of treatments, stem cell transplants, whatever kinds of treatments you're facing. Do you find that there are people who are surprised by the number of challenges they face when all of that is over? Is there sort of a short-term focus and then after you get through all of that stuff, are people surprised by how much more they need to deal with?
Very much so. And one of the first things that comes to mind is the fear that patients have actually at the very end of treatment. You know, you might think that at the end of a long course of chemotherapy, radiation, a transplant, a surgery, that patients would run out the door and, you know, not wave and say goodbye. But people actually have a great deal of fear about that transition back into, quote, the real world, where, you know, when they're being treated for cancer and going through treatment, the doctors, the nurses, the social workers, people that they may encounter in a cancer center are very familiar with them and their current struggles, and we release them back into the world to live ideally a long and healthy life, but there are people out there who may not understand these struggles that they currently experience even after cancer treatment. People expect patients to bounce back and, you know, get through it and kind of toughen up, and the general public, coworkers or other family members may not realize the uncertainty that they're still feeling or the worry about recurrence or, as Liz mentioned, some of the physical symptoms that very much are present after treatment.
Well, and for a lot of people who are getting treated for cancer, they look like cancer patients. You can see that a person is undergoing chemotherapy if they happen to lose their hair or something like that. Do some survivors feel like after they stop looking like a cancer patient that people don't treat them the same way?
They do, very much so. People will tell us that, you know, it's very clear when you're at the grocery store and you may look quite thin or have a scarf or a wig or something, that there is a certain kind of experience that you're carrying with you at that time. But once you begin to meld into the general population, you still carry those experiences and trauma and worry and things with you that may not be quite so visible. And so that's certainly a time when people have more difficulty potentially sharing their experience and putting purpose to themselves and their meaning after the fact.
Liz, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I think touching on what Jen said, I think that patients often, you know, they get done with their treatment and they feel like they should be grateful or that they should be able to move on immediately. You know, they put that pressure on themselves that, you know, we got done and, you know, that's it. But, you know, so oftentimes what I do in some of my first visits with patients is reminding them that, you know, this was a trauma and going through treatment is traumatic and you made it through it, which is wonderful and that's amazing, but that doesn't mean that it's something that you just get over and you move on from. And sometimes, you know, you need help and assistance, whether it be, you know, psychological care or, you know, just counseling or therapy or, you know, something great like, you know, art therapy or something just that can help you process and kind of move on and express yourself from this experience. And then even with the physical effects, you know, patients think, okay, well, I'm done with my treatments, so now I can go back to normal. But some of the physical challenges can be can require that you need rehab, you know, be physical therapy, occupational therapy, and other things just to get that function back.
Talking to Pamela earlier, it was interesting. She's obviously somebody who, being a cancer survivor, has defined her in many ways. And I'm sure a lot of people want to or expect to return to the life that they had before. But do you find that having survived cancer becomes a major part of someone's identity after, Liz?
I think sometimes, you know, I mean, I think people, you know, I think sometimes you, it definitely impacts their psyche. You know, they went through this journey, and so they might have a different emotional state or outlook on life. But sometimes the changes that can happen with cancer treatment can be very subtle. And, you know, and some patients can maybe adapt a little bit easier than other patients when it comes to, you know, returning back to life after.
Do you have anything to add to that, Jen?
Right. I think that certainly some people, you know, based on your how you coped during treatment, you know, depending on the stage of your cancer, the life stage you're at, your experiences potentially with healthcare in the past or other health experiences that you may have had, definitely impact everybody. But I don't know a cancer survivor who will tell you that it didn't impact them at all. It's just certainly varying degrees. And one of the most amazing things I'm struck by every single day when I come to work and work with people is the amazing amount of resilience that everyone who is undergoing a cancer treatment or has been is a cancer survivor, no matter how far out they are, is the resilience that they have to just put one foot in front of the other sometimes each day. So that's what certainly every single cancer survivor does have, whether they know it or know to express it or not.
We have this email from Luke. He said he was diagnosed with leukemia in 2008 when he was only 28 years old, when he was going to college at the University of Northern Iowa. And then he fought through that to win, was again diagnosed in 2009, again fought and won. It was life-changing and changed the entire dynamic for he himself and his family. He said it was very hard to get back to the real world physically and mentally. Stem cell the second time, it wrecked my world for a year plus, but then saved my life. Going through 3 stem cell transplants while bringing a new child into the world was pretty wild. That sounds like a very intense experience. And Jen, how long, everybody's different. everybody's, you know, obviously going to have a different experience. But do you find that there are cancer survivors who need therapy and need support for a lot longer than they might have expected?
They certainly do, right? Everybody is different. And again, depending on a lot of times life cycle, where you are in your phase of life, whether you're raising children or in the middle of your career or retired or elderly, all experience things very different. And people need a different kind of support after cancer treatment and desire a different kind of support. So there certainly isn't a standard that everyone needs. But any kind of way of expressing or reaching out for support of what your experience was, whether that is one-on-one counseling or support groups. There are so many organizations out there right now that offer peer-to-peer support so that you can be connected or offer support, offer your experiences down the road to someone who might be experiencing your type of cancer. Now, people do really need different things. Some people are much more internal or personal copers, and so they may talk with their family members, and that may be all the support that they really need. Others need a better outlet or a different kind of outlet, like the Living Proof exhibit, other kinds of music or exercise or volunteer service to others. So it really is specific. There is no wrong way to do it, as long as the individual feels that they're getting the support that they need to move forward.
I want to get a quick phone call in here. Carol's on the line from Piasta. Hello, Carol.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to share?
Oh, I just, I'm a 35-year brain cancer survivor, and I had my babies were 18 months and 3 years
mm-hmm.
old when I was diagnosed. And it is very traumatic, but I think the most part is positive attitude and just listening to your own body. And talk to the doctors. So when you feel a certain way, tell them how you're feeling to have them comfort you. And more doctors are being, more compassionate than they used to be when I was going through it. And I just, right now, I am searching, like you just said on the radio, for how to share my experience and help others. There was a program that I used to do. It was called Cancer Mount, and it was through the American Cancer Society. I haven't seen that yet, and that was a long time. And maybe you could tell me if there is such a thing like that. I mentored cancer patients and love doing it, and I feel like it really helped them.
Well, I don't know that I can tell you what is available, but thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today, Carol.
Okay. You're welcome.
And we are nearly out of time. And Jen, I want to ask you and Liz, both of you, very quickly, if somebody is going through cancer treatment, do you have a word of wisdom for them about what to expect after the treatment is over and how to cope with that?
Well, I guess what I would say is that that there are so many resources available that patients often want to get back to, they talk about this new normal after cancer treatment, but it's not that you always have to, accept the impairments that came along with your treatment, that there's so many resources out there as far as, like I said, physical therapy, occupational therapy, other things that we can get you in touch with to really help improve, and make it so that you have the quality of life, after cancer treatment. And then I always want patients, survivors and patients starting the journey to know that there is life after cancer.
So don't be afraid to ask for help.
Right.
We are out of time, but thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jen Adams is a social worker at Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Iowa, and Liz Cullen is a nurse practitioner in radiation oncology at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.